my local butcher was like, oh, we're just crazy busy. We just don't have enough hands to be able to get everything done. We need another person. I said, well, I'm not a butcher. I've worked meat stations and I can hold a knife. If I can help, I'd love to come work for you. And pretty much then and there, they said, yep, come on, come in tomorrow. Bring your knives. We'll take you and we'll just teach you along the way.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. With so many out of work, many in the hospitality sector looked for whatever work they could find until the industry opened up again. Some took the opportunity to leave the industry for good. Others sought opportunities in food retail to garner new skills. Kylie Miller is a butcher at Shane's Quality Butchery in Cremorne, Sydney. Kylie, how are you going?
Very good, thanks, Huck. How's it going?
Good. You've had a bit of a change recently. You've used knives for your career, but you're doing something a little bit different these days than chefing and working as a butcher.
Yes. Shane's Quality Butchery, just my local butchery. I've been there for pretty much the last 6 months, actually. Totally different to being in the kitchen.
Well, you were in the USA before the whole world turned upside down because of this pandemic. Can you take us back to that time and what you were doing over there?
Yeah, I was actually over at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, and I've been there for just over a year, and I was actually due to come home to renew my visa. But with COVID and the pandemic hitting, it hit so fast that the restaurant closed before I was actually due to come home. So the chef de cuisine just said, Kylie, go home, go home. We don't know what's going to happen, just go home. So I virtually just had to collect everything, and within sort of 48 hours found myself on a flight to come home to Sydney.
What was that flight like? Were you nervous about it given what was going on in the world?
Yeah, it was pretty hectic actually leading up into that, because it felt like there was a lot of whispers going around. Not that it was just more sort of nobody really knew what was going on, and particularly international travel and how that would be affected. I had sort of family and friends from back home in Oz feeding me information with what the government was saying here and with restrictions on travel that were happening and happening really quickly. And then small little cases of the virus popping up, which were getting closer and closer to the vicinity and the area of the restaurant too. And we weren't quite sure what was going to happen. I was nervous. I was quite nervous at the time.
Was your experience of that early stage in the US, was it quite different to how it felt here for you?
Yes, it was quite funny actually, because I remember seeing like news articles pop up saying that randomly all the toilet paper aisles had been cleared out in Australia, and we were all having a laugh about that over in the States, going, oh, ha ha ha, why are people being so crazy over there? But literally within days of reading that, the same thing happened in the States, and it seemed, well, from what I was seeing from the other side of the world to Australia, it just seemed to escalate a lot quicker in the States to what it was happening in Australia at the time as well. And obviously they've been hit pretty hard over in the US with the amount of cases and all. Yeah.
You mentioned that you were in the States for a year. What was it like at Blue Hill? Can you take us through that experience?
Oh, I love Blue Hill so much. It's incredible, an incredible, incredible kitchen. Not only is it the food and working in the kitchen itself incredible, I think it's the relationship for me between the kitchen and the farm. So being able to have the farmers on site, they come into our morning meetings, our morning chef meetings, which sort of usually other restaurants I've worked in, your morning meetings maybe 10 minutes long. If you're going more than that, you're really going, come on guys, hurry up, I need to get all my prep. But our meetings would be half an hour, some of them up to an hour sometimes, and it would be the farmers coming in and telling us about what they're harvesting, what they're planting, what things they're finding with different trial varieties of vegetables, or the livestock manager coming in and telling us about a new breeding program and how that might affect the flavour later down the track of the meats that we'll get in. And really honing in on flavour, not just in the cooking sense, but growing and bringing up the animal to sort of be the best quality it can be in that raw state before we actually get it into the kitchen. And for me, that was just fascinating. I had never sort of thought of the concept of growing something for flavour before you get it into the kitchen. It was always like, okay, how can we make this thing that we got at the crate at the back door taste good? Dan Barber and the team over there really just like, okay, we can work from the seed and then develop the flavour from the seed onwards. So, yeah, for me that was just absolutely fascinating.
Well, it's world-renowned and considered one of the best restaurants on the planet, and Dan Barber is a bit of an enigma. What's he like to actually work with?
He's really a genius. I have never met anybody in my life that is so is just so knowledgeable about a lot of things. We'll get people coming in from universities who, for example, might be a wheat farmer, and he will be able to hold a conversation with them to sort of the Latin names of different varieties of wheat, going in that sort of depth. But then on the flip side, have somebody come in and talk about 10 different varieties of peppers, and he's again sort of keeping up with these people that have studied for their whole career on different peppers and capsicums and things as well. So he amazes me with his knowledge, and how generous he is with sort of those chef meetings in the morning, being imparting a lot of that knowledge to the people that sort of work in the kitchen and the front of house and that sort of thing too. It amazed me that someone was, obviously it's his business, and he was really happy to sort of share that information that he's built up over his career too.
Many chefs would dream to have the experience that you had over a year at that restaurant. How did you end up getting a gig there?
It was actually through 2018, I think it was. I won the Josephine Pignolet Award, and that gave me the opportunity to go and stage in a restaurant overseas. And at the time, I was actually working at Attica in Melbourne, and Dan Barber had just launched his Row 7 seed company and was reaching out to different chefs across the world to potentially grow some of the seeds. And at Attica, I was in charge of the garden, so I was sort of the one filtering through a bit of this information that we were receiving from them. And it just surprised me that somebody would go into the depth of actually, a chef would go to the extent of putting so much time and effort into growing a plant from the seed and the genetics makeup of the plant itself for it to taste good before you get it into the kitchen. I just thought, wow, this place is crazy. And then the more I got into it, the way that they sort of, they run the kitchen with being on site on the farm, and being in such close contact to the farmers and that sort of thing too, I just thought it was incredible. So I really just wanted to have a go. So I went over and staged for a bit over three months, and then just fell in love with the place, and they offered me a job. So I said, yep, I'm coming back. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Well, Kylie, you're a bit of an anomaly, because not many MasterChef contestants end up carving out a real career in the industry. There's been a few, but also not many go on to win the accolades that you've also achieved in the industry. What's it been like since leaving MasterChef? How hard was the reality of working in the industry compared to perceptions of what it might be when you were doing MasterChef?
I think it's a funny sort of flip side. Without the opportunity of MasterChef for me, I don't think there would have been a lot of doors opened and contacts that I have been able to get along the way. But you sort of, I think from the telly, it does sugarcoat it a little bit, well, a lot. when you do get into the kitchen and everything, you do realize the hours and the hard work and everything that goes into it. And for me, my mum and dad always brought me up with, you always start at the bottom and you learn, and then that's the way you progress. You always start from the bottom, and as you learn, if you're doing a good job and whatever, then you'll progress through the ranks or whatever. That's always what they instilled to me and my sister as kids. So for me, like, I was more than happy to wash pots, to tell you the truth. Like, I just wanted to learn how to cook. I was just a home cook, and being able to just get into a kitchen and learn from some of the best chefs in the world, I was like, wow, I'll just stand and watch you guys all day. You don't have to give me a job or anything. So, yeah, I must say I was really fortunate to have some great people as my mentors along the way, and still my mentors. And, yeah, hard work as well. If I didn't know something, was obviously I haven't gone to TAFE or really done a proper apprenticeship, I'd go home and Google it or watch something on YouTube and practice a few bits and pieces. So I try and get my skills up. And yeah, just be honest, I suppose, with the people I was working with too, that I didn't know what they were talking about and that sort of thing. And I think not trying to pretend helps. Yeah, not pretending, just sort of being open and honest and saying, look, I don't know. Can you show me the way you would like it or the best way to do it? And yeah, I think that's helped along the way.
Well, before MasterChef, you were a trained physiotherapist, and you went on the show because you loved cooking and you wanted to cook. Did you ever envisage being a chef, or did you just want to be part of the competition at the time?
I'd always sort of envisaged being a chef. I worked at a little cafe just as a waitress going through school and through uni, and I was always like, oh, I'm going to go to uni, become a physio, earn some money so I can have a little place of my own later down the track. Going and being a physio, I always sort of thought of my way to get some dosh behind me so I could finance something myself. So I always knew I wanted to be in the industry in some way or form. But I'd gone overseas and traveled around Europe, like all sort of young Aussies tend to do these days. And really I was amazed by how the Europeans and particularly Italians, sort of their way of life and the culture of food and everything is just, it's ingrained in them. And I was like, oh, stuff having to wait years and years and years to, I want to do it. And came home, and I think it was the last 2 weeks of the first season of MasterChef. And I was like, wow, that's a really cool, that's a cool show. I like that. So applied a couple of years later. Lucky enough to end up on the show.
You mentioned your time at Attica. Can you tell us what you learned from then, and what was like working with Ben Shuri, one of the, arguably Australia's most influential chefs?
Yeah. Before I got to Attica, I had been over in Spain working at Muguritz, and the sort of way I came about really wanting to work at Attica is I was like, wow, the Spanish, they're so proud of all their produce that they make here in Spain, and they really highlight that in their food. I was like, I really would love to learn how to use more indigenous ingredients, because I was really ignorant about a lot of it. And I was like, oh, who does this? I was like, wow, Ben Shuri. When I came back, I applied and sort of did a trial and fortunate enough to work there. But Ben's incredible. Again, another person who's so willing and generous with his knowledge. Really sort of, you've got a question, he'll answer it and give you as much information as he can. Always seeking out to sort of extend his knowledge and sort of bringing you along the way as well. And I really appreciated how much he, we're his employees. He didn't have to do anything really for us, but he would always be really, not concerned, I suppose that's the wrong word, but he would always think about our life outside of work as well. And for me, how he restructured our timetable to having 3 days off a week for me was, I was like, wow, this is unheard of. Why would you do this? But he was, yeah, very generous in giving that to us as his employees. And I think that helps. Well, that just the gratitude from us, I think, showed in us really wanting to work hard for him and being really appreciative of that sort of thing as well.
You briefly mentioned another amazing restaurant, Mugaritz, and you spent some time there. You've got quite the CV, Kylie. What was the biggest lesson you learnt over there?
Probably the most blaringly obvious one when I first got there was, oh, maybe I should have learned a little bit of Spanish before I got here. Would have been helpful. I was sort of a fish out of water, not really knowing what if people were talking to me during service or what. But I think with Mugaritz, it's such a creative kitchen, and not limiting yourself to what you currently know. They're sort of like, well, if you're really wanting to do a particular dish or whatever, just have a crack, go for it, and just keep working at it, keep sort of trial and error along the way, and eventually you'll either toss the idea out, or a lot of the time you'll find a way to make it happen. And it's just this real sort of vibe of creativity and innovation over there that they really encourage and try and get you to encompass the whole time that you're there.
You came back to Australia and you didn't have a job after being in the US because of the pandemic. Tell us about how you ended up working in a butcher.
So when I landed, pretty much all the restaurants were closed and nobody had really started doing any form of takeaway or anything, and everyone was sort of in panic mode with just trying to keep their own staff, let alone take anybody new on board and try and be able to pay them. So at the time when I got back, I had just walked up the street to go and get some meat for dinner, and there was a huge line out of the butcher shop, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. Why is there so many people lining up? And obviously people were trying to stockpile and whatever, but my local butcher was like, oh, we're just crazy busy. We just don't have enough hands to be able to get everything done. We need another person. And I said, well, I'm not a butcher. I've worked meat stations and I can hold a knife. If I can help, I'd love to come work for you. And pretty much then and there they said, yep, come on, come in tomorrow. Bring your knives. We'll take you and we'll just teach you along the way what we can with the time given. So, yeah, I was pretty much just the right place at the right time, I think. Incredibly lucky to be able to get a job.
You've worked in some pretty extraordinary restaurants and kitchens. What's it like working in a butcher? Did you feel a bit out of your depth, or was it an easy sort of in for you, given the knife skills that you already have?
I was feeling a little bit out of my depth when I got there, but it was funny, my background in physiotherapy sort of helped a little bit when I was there. As sick as some people say it sounds, a lot of the muscles or the meat on the animals, I can identify the joints and the muscles and that sort of thing, and I'm like, oh, okay, I know how that runs. It sounds really sick when I say it out loud. I find it so fascinating. I know how it works on a person, and I just sort of twig it a little bit to something on four legs rather than being two. And yeah, it's translatable, that sort of physio anatomy to butchery anatomy. And that, I must say, that has helped a lot with being able to break down like four quarters or different sort of bones and parts off the carcasses of different animals and that sort of thing too. It's been great. It's been an eye opener, and I've been totally out of my depth, but have learnt a lot in the past 6 months.
How do you think you'll use those butchering skills that you've been learning when you get back in a restaurant kitchen?
Well, in one way, knowing how to butcher meat coming from if you're getting a whole animal into the kitchen, or as I said, a quarter or like a hind quarter or a fore quarter or something like that, if you know how to butcher it from that sort of spot, for one, it's a lot cheaper for you to get it in that way and not just already cut up pieces of meat. So for me, like down the track, I'd love to be able to have my own restaurant. So I sort of am taking in that sort of knowledge of, okay, well, these are how different parts you would use them, and sort of costing it out a little bit along the way. And for me, knowing how to break it down and then translate it across into a menu sort of setting, I think money-wise, it's a really good way to go. Yes, it's going to be a little bit more time-consuming, but I think we've sort of learned from COVID that you sort of have to your business model potentially has to change a little bit with a lot of hospitality things. And this could be one way of trying to help with costs later down the track.
How do you feel about the hospitality sector at the moment? It's taken the biggest hit ever, and there's concerns for many moving forward once the government support goes. And what do you feel about a career in the industry right now?
It's definitely a tough time. Originally, when I got back and everything was closed, and people were having to go back overseas to home countries and that sort of thing, I was like, wow, how are we actually going to recover? Restaurants that have been open for years and years and years are sort of on the brink of, well, if we don't sort of generate an income in the next couple of weeks, we won't be reopening whenever this is over. And for me, that was, I was blown away to think that places wouldn't be reopening, and chefs that I'd admired and sort of grown up looking at, I'm like, wow, I can't believe that these guys wouldn't be cooking anymore. This is just crazy. But I think it also has sort of allowed us, a lot of people in the industry, to sort of step outside of their comfort zone a little bit and really go, okay, how can we, what can we do? And I think great examples of people doing takeaway and home menus and that sort of thing has been great. It's really cool that people can still enjoy food from their favorite restaurants in their own house and still feel safe when they're dining and that sort of thing. And seeing like people like Ben Shuri doing his cook with Ben on Instagram and that sort of thing, people get such a kick out of it, and it's great for encouraging people at home to cook and inspire them to try different stuff. I think that's been great. It's interesting now. There's a lot of, I notice a lot of places actually looking that are reopened up here in Sydney, actually looking for chefs, and I think that shows with a lot of the workforce that had come from overseas to come and work in Australia. That's where we're missing a lot of people that would be helping with filling those jobs and helping with running of these businesses as well. That it's going to be hard to sort of regenerate that workforce again. But yeah, it's been an interesting way to see the whole industry, because it has been hit really hard. And I know it's been a lot of stress for a lot of people.
You've obviously got some friends in Spain and the US. What are you hearing from them about their current situation?
Yeah, Spain was, well, it's pretty much similar to here, where a lot of restaurants had closed, and a couple of my friends in San Sebastian had been trying to do a lot of the takeaway from their restaurant and delivery sort of systems as well. But it didn't, because San Sebastian is such a huge tourist based town during sort of the winter, it's virtually just the locals there. So, and it's not a huge sort of traffic of people running through there. So these places that during the summertime would be sort of, you would be lining up out the door to get into different restaurants, that they don't have that. So they've been struggling to be able to maintain their business, I suppose, and pay their bills and everything too. In the US, particularly at Blue Hill, a lot of the chefs from the kitchen, that they were actually doing produce boxes. Sort of the style of takeaway boxes sort of thing is back here, but a lot more fresh ingredients from the farm. So a lot of the chefs from the kitchen were actually out on the farm helping harvest, plant, weed, any sort of farm-based work. They were actually out on the farm helping as well, which is great too, because it makes us appreciate it even more when we do get that produce in the kitchen, because you've had a hand in seeing it grow and the process from growing it to harvesting it as well. So, yeah.
You mentioned a bit earlier, just briefly, that you, when you were younger, you dreamed of having your own place. What does that look like? And is that a reality in the near future?
I don't think in the very near future for me. I think with the uncertainty of pretty much how the pandemic has and COVID have been rolling along, it's really hard to sort of even look of setting up a new business, or how you would sort of work with demographics and that sort of thing in areas. I think it's funny. I've always wanted something for me that I love knowing how things are made, and the idea of making everything on site. So butchery for me is fantastic, because I'm learning sort of some of those first principle skills that you can use to either sort of you break down something and some parts get cooked as fresh meat, some bits get cured as charcuterie. So for me it's a real using everything and making everything on site style of thing for a restaurant. But it might be a little bit down the track yet, I think, before I actually go into opening anything up.
With such extraordinary experiences that you've had, and given that premise of the way that you would operate a restaurant when you do eventually open your own, can you give us an idea of your style of cooking? Like, what is your food on the plate?
I love simple things, things that are incredibly tasty and simple, but have a little bit of a twist of something creative or that you're not expecting. I'm just trying to think of something off the top of my head that I made recently, but I'm like, oh, I've been in the butcher. It's been a bit tricky. But, yeah, something that people will go, oh, wow, I wouldn't have ever thought of trying that. But, yeah, I'm going to have a go at it. It sounds delicious. Even I suppose people coming into the butcher, and they'll say, oh, what would you use that cut of meat for? How would you do it? And I'll say, well, this is sort of the traditional way, but I would probably put a twist to it and do it that way. I think flavor's always foremost most important, something tasty, but then something a little bit exciting or creative, something different to sort of not inspire, but just give a little bit of a talking point at the table.
You're not one to sit still. You really like to get amongst it, and you didn't muck around getting a job, and you've been busy during this time, but it's been a stressful time for so many. How have you felt during the last 6 or 7 months, given what's happened all around the globe?
I suppose quite stressed before I landed the job at the butcher. But I think I'm, to tell you the truth, I'm probably one of the very lucky people. I managed to actually get back home to Australia, which is one thing, because I know there's a lot of people that are still stuck overseas that are trying to get back because either visas are running out or they want to come home to their family. So in that sort of setting, I was incredibly grateful to be able to get home. My sister had a baby during COVID, so I became an auntie for the first time. So for me, being able to be home and around for that, when for the past sort of 9 years I haven't lived in Sydney for more than a month, it's actually been really lovely to be around for her and for my little niece as well, and actually see her as she's been growing up these past 6 months. But I think going forward, it's not worrying, but it's a concern to sort of know how to structure things going forward with going back to work in the kitchen how a restaurant sort of business model would look and that sort of thing. I think it really has shaken up a lot of things, and I think there's a few more things to consider going forward with opening up new businesses in the hospitality realm.
There's been a lot of people in the hospitality sector considering career changes during this time. You made a real success of a massive career change. What advice would you give to people that might be making a big change, taking this opportunity?
I think it's a hard thing. It's almost like a reset button, I feel like, for a lot of people, because you're sort of almost starting at square one if you're thrown out of work or sort of thrown into turmoil. I think have a go. If it doesn't work out, you can always go back to something that you know that you've got experience in, and maybe then progressively move forward into that new career or a different industry that you're wanting to go into. But I think if you're willing to give it a go, and most people are happy to take on people that are willing. I found that through sort of my whole career, to tell you the truth. If you're willing to have a go and put your all into it, most people will say, great, let's have a crack. And as long as you're happy to give your time and effort into it, people will respond in that way as well.
When the pandemic eventually calms down, do you see yourself heading back overseas, or is Australia looking more appealing at the moment?
Oh, I'm sort of in two boats. I'm still planning on going back to Blue Hill at Stone Barns. That's still my plan. But my little niece is growing up, and she's way too cute, so she's definitely pulling at my heartstrings to stay in Australia at the moment as well. So I think it's for me, it's just having to weigh things up as time rolls on, and just when sort of it does calm down a little bit and things start to go back to normal a bit more, where I'm at and whether it's sticking here back in Australia or going back over to the States, it'll just have to see how it all falls.
Well, I think Australia would appreciate you being here at some stage in your career and opening a restaurant. Kylie, we've really appreciated and loved having you on Deep in the Weeds. Please keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.